Welcome to Dig in the Dharma, where we dig into the Buddhist Dharma and explore ways to bring these 2,500-year-old teachings into our lives. I'm Doug Smith of Doug's Dharma on YouTube and the online Dharma Institute.
And I'm John Aaron, teacher at New York Insight Meditation Center and mindfulness-based stress reduction teacher and teacher trainer and founder of Space to Meditate.
Well, good morning, John. Great to see you here on the screen, as always.
Good to see you, Doug. I have my coffee cup in hand, ready to go.
All right.
I don't see yours, but I assume it's there somewhere.
Well, not coffee. I've got water with me.
Oh, but, okay.
You know, I had coffee earlier today.
All right.
I can't wake up without it. So, you know, I mean,
yeah,
it's just fantastic.
I get it. It's part of my morning routine, just like yours. And, you know.
Yep.
Thank God for our podcast fans who... You know,
that's
keep
right.
Us well stocked and
keep
you know.
Us keep us one way or the other. Well, yeah, with coffee, indirectly.
Yes, I don't know if people are welcome to send us coffee. We just never given our address, so you know we've never tried that.
Yeah. But after your suggestion to look for a good fair trade coffee, I found have good coffee that I order from regularly.
Okay. Well, we don't have any paid sponsors, so we can't talk.
That's
about
right.
It.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to get
the
paid
though,
sponsor.
Actually. Yeah. I'll talk to the place where I get my Puerto Rico. Oops. Anyway, it's a coffee shop in. Well, they have one in the East Village and one in the West Village.
I've been past the one in the East Village.
I mean,
I'm sorry, in the West Village.
Yeah,
it's a very cool little shop.
Yeah, it's been there for a long time, and it's just
forever
walking. Yeah, and so we order from there, and yeah, have been for a long time. In fact, I have to order today, otherwise I'm going to run out in a couple of days. So, yeah. Anyway,
I get it from Larry's. Larry's is in, I think it's North Carolina.
Okay.
And, excellent, excellent coffee.
Good to know. God, we just promoted two places, and now we don't. Okay. Well,
and they don't sponsor us. We're not sponsored or anything.
Yeah,
maybe they will eventually. You know, if they want to sponsor us, that's
fine. We should look into this. Okay. Oh, how we digress, and we haven't gotten started yet.
Yeah.
I guess then we haven't digressed. We're right on top.
We
were going to, but it's not unrelated because sometimes coffee is needed to get us going. And we wanted to talk about right effort since we're still on some of the core teachings. And right mm-hmm. effort is number 6, I think, in the Eightfold Path. But mm-hmm. who's counting?
The you first know, of the ones about meditation, so to speak.
Right.
I mean, it's,
you know. Yeah. Yeah.
Insofar as you cut these things up into three. Yeah.
Yeah. It's important and it's an interesting topic. I mean, I think that it also indirectly, it's related to the parami of determination, the perfection of the heart of determination, which is also, and the, to some degree, the quality of shraddha, of faith, you know, that all of that is important when it comes to effort.
Mm-hmm. Energy,
virya. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. that's really key.
Yep.
In fact, that's really what the word is, right? Isn't it samavirya? Samapadana, I think. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
I'll have to look it up.
Yeah, but virya is part of that, of course, energy. And so it's like...
Samavayamo.
There are various ways of approaching it, but one of the teachings has to do with these... What are they? The four mm-hmm. right
four
mm-hmm. The right what are they called?
Four aspects of right effort, you could call. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Exertions. Sometimes it's mm-hmm. called right four mm-hmm. four exertions, which just has to do with generating certain qualities of mind and
supporting and preserving. Yeah.
Supporting and preserving, and also getting rid of. Mm-hmm. I suppose.
Yep. And making so that things don't keep coming back.
Easier said than done.
All of it is easier. Yes. All of it is easier said than done.
Right.
At least you're starting by just talking about the four, you know, I mean, you don't have to do anything. You just have to talk about them, right?
There you go. Yeah.
Just list them.
Yeah.
Good.
I mean,
good
it's talking about exerting the mind so mm-hmm. that it gets rid of unskillful qualities mm-hmm. or so that they don't arise mm-hmm. And that they're given up. Right. And then exerting the mind so that the skillful qualities arise and stay basically. You know, and that is important because you're, you know, since the practice is obviously to see the insights into greed, hatred and delusion and the other things that get in our way, those unskillful qualities are usually imbued with those those poisons of greed, hatred, and delusion. And if we really look at them, then of course we want to give them up. But they keep coming up anyway, right? Yeah. So it's like, how do we work with that, and how do we continue to cultivate the good qualities? Mm-hmm. And I think for me, at least in my teaching, I like to remind people that I think basically we're born with those good qualities. And, you know, the external circumstances, of course, are what bring in the bad qualities. And so they can have a little faith in that, you know, that at least if I can see those qualities clearly, you know, I need to see the qualities clearly in order to get rid of them, basically. But if I realize that those qualities are, the good qualities are there and the bad qualities are there too, but they weren't necessarily there when I was born.
I would disagree with that, but
you know. Well, go ahead. I think
both of them. I think both of them are inherent in us.
Yeah.
We have an inherent tendency to do good, and we also have many inherent faults. The tendencies towards anger go back right to the beginning. The tendency to hatred or greed, those go back right to the beginning. And we may not have the ability to conceptualize them, but, I mean, animals that can't conceptualize them still also have them. So, you know, I mean, they're endemic, and we have to practice to be able to get rid of them, I think.
Yeah, I think that there's desire, of course. In other words, when we watch, you know, a young child, that there'll be desire to have something, to have food or to have a toy or to have whatever, right? That's normal, and that's that's part of who we are. And then when we don't get that, you know, we get upset, right? That's a little different than hatred and greed, I think. So I think we just have to, you know, it may go into that. It may evolve into that, but I think it evolves into that if the conditions are such that it just promotes that. That's all. And then the underlying conditions could also, of course, include karmic conditions, you know.
Sure, so, sure. I mean, some of us will have it worse than others. But I mean, I think the underlying tendencies are always there unless we eradicate them through practice. And, you know, Lord knows I'm you know, I would love to believe that they can be completely eradicated. But at the very least, they're there, you know, for all of us.
Yeah.
When we're born there, we're born with these tendencies. And we're born with tendencies for good. You know, we're born with Hiriyanotapa, the ability conscience and prudence, you know, to have a conscience, and at least most of us are.
Right.
I mean, I guess there are some people who may not be, but.
Right. So I think that the rephrasing is then more about, okay, so if we're born with both tendencies, which I can accept, the tendencies evolve based on our causes and conditions. Mm-hmm. Primarily, and included in that, of course, are the karmic conditions that we're also born with, depending on how one views that. And so some of us will find it easier to let go of these unskillful tendencies, and some of us will find it a lot harder. And of course, what does it mean to get rid of, right? I mean, the thoughts will arise, or they can arise in the mind, you know, which are rooted in greed, hatred, and delusion, or maybe they won't in time, you know. And of course, as we develop our practice, what we're seeing is subtler and subtler. So what we wouldn't have thought of as greed, we suddenly start to realize, oh yeah, that is a taint of greed, you know, just that pulling desire for something that I don't have.
Or they come up, you know, the underlying tendency may still be there, but it may be attenuated to the extent that, you know, it doesn't manifest itself except in much more trying circumstances, you know.
Right.
A relatively benign circumstance that we might have previously reacted to before with greed or anger, now that we've practiced, we can step back from that and be able to not react there, even though, you know, look, if we're pushed, we'll still get angry. I think the tendencies become more attenuated when we practice. At least that's my experience, is they become more attenuated with practice.
Yeah, and so this is part of right effort is to, you know, cultivate one and see more clearly the other and let those things go. Yeah. And so, you know, that at least opens a path, you know, which makes it easier to be mindful, which makes it easier to concentrate. But it's funny because, you know, when I, that to me feels very different than energy. And energy for me comes from, you know, another place altogether, which is basically the desire to wake up. Mm-hmm. And there are any number of for me anyway, any number of ways to kind of energize, I wouldn't say energize, but that it, sort of to ignite that, you know.
Cultivate it.
Which, you know, one of which is just to realize I just never know when my last breath is going to be, right? And so every breath is a reminder to wake up, you know, to wake up to what's here. With that in mind, it's like, oh, I have a lot to do, or these unhelpful tendencies are just getting in the way of that. So I really need to like work here. Or I really need to, and that level of energy, that's the virya. That's what keeps pushing me forward in a sense, or pushing this mind forward.
You know? Right. I mean, one, and also can be helpful to, you know, think of the first noble truth of coming to know dukkha. That can give you energy too to practice when you see the pain, you know, or suffering or whatever unsatisfactoriness. That can give, at least I can find at times, gives me the impetus to continue practice, because I realize the practice is going to help the suffering, right? In other words, it's the suffering that's the problem. And so if I could just put a little more effort, you know, right effort into this, maybe I can help, you know, diminish that suffering a bit, and it happens that way. So looking at the suffering and realizing, oh, this is the downside of not doing the practice, right?
Right. This is not, you know. Yeah. And then I think the other thing is just going back to the noble, you know, just staying with the noble truths for a second is, I mean, when you realize the cause of the suffering, of course, that's seeing the unskillful tendency right there. And then when you have those moments of freedom, the third noble truth, then it's like, oh, you know, I want that to continue. So, yeah. You know, this is really a useful feedback loop in a sense, you know, which then gives us more energy, hopefully. I know that, you know, there are days when I should get up and I got to do the meditation again, you know, it's like, and it's interesting. I mean, now that we have this daily sangha. I mean, I don't see them every day because we have a team, fortunately. But I have to say that on those days another important contributor to energy. You know, when I have those days when I just okay, it's time to meditate. You know, and I go and it's my turn to lead the daily sangha online. And then I see all these faces in front of me, and I have all these others to sort of support me in practice. That's another way of both bringing energy and also right effort, because you're being held, in a way, you're being held accountable just by being there and having others be there. We're all holding each other accountable in a good way, you know. And I think it's really kind of cool when you have that community, a kind of community to practice with. And
I mean, one of the recommended ways of practicing in general from the Buddha is to have, you know, spiritual friendships, a sangha, of course. I mean, because, you know, it makes practice so much easier. And as you say, it can give you energy. I mean, nothing gives you more energy than practicing in a group together in the same room. I mean, that, you know, everyone remarks on that.
Yeah. Yeah, although it's interesting. I mean, I totally agree with you. On the other hand, I'm also surprised at how well it works online.
I'm really surprised. It's not the same, but yeah, it's better than nothing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a long way from nothing, actually, but it's. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, but I think the other aspect of effort is not just informal practice. And it's interesting because, you know, those three aspects of the three factors of the Eightfold Path is right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration, right samadhi, is that it doesn't, you know, there's also just the effort of bringing the teachings into our lives on a regular basis. And so I know that, and I've talked about this in other settings, but if we're really mindful, you know, and our, if when something arises, the moment that I am finding myself in any level of dukkha, and I'm not talking about informal practice, but just like, you know, beating myself for being late for something or you know, any number of things that come up, I have to then stop and look, right? Mm. And stopping and looking is a kind of right effort right there, because, you know, what is getting in the way is some unskillful tendency, is something rooted in greed, hatred, and delusion. And it may be hatred toward myself at that moment, mm-hmm. right? So it's like, oh, so that moment of stopping and that moment of actually checking out what's true, that level of inquiry, whenever something arises that's creating any level of dukkha, some would say, well, how do I, you know, I'd have to stop every 3 minutes or something. But,
that's the problem.
But, you know, it's still, I think it's really an important practice, and that we sort of, you know, find ourselves in the middle of a day frustrated or impatient or whatever it is. And it's like, well, what's going on? You know, what?
Yeah.
What's really
and,
here?
And you can make it, I mean, it helps, I think, to make it part of your practice, you know, to stop when you're having these kinds of annoying times in your life. But also, I think, by making them part of your practice, some of the sting is taken out of it, you know, because you can think of it, you know, when you're sitting in line, you know, standing in line at the airport or, you know, whatever, standing in line at a, wherever you are, standing in a line, right? And you're just thinking to yourself, why am I standing in this line? You know, making it a practice of, oh, you know,
I'm standing in a line.
I'm standing in a line. Then all of a sudden,
right.
You know, it's like the second, I mean, you know, the Buddha talked about the two arrows. This one arrow right. is the actual pain that we all have to endure, even the Buddha. And the other one is the suffering. And it sort of reduces that suffering just to consider it that as part of your practice. Because yeah. then it becomes something positive, and you've reframed something that's painful. And so, in a sense, a little bit, you've reframed it a little bit so that it's less suffering than it was before. And so I think that's a victory.
I mean, oh, yeah, for sure. You know, and it's also just standing in line. It's really interesting. I mean, it's such a – or just waiting for the subway. Whatever we're doing, right, that we sort of – it raises a little bit of mm-hmm. dukkha, at least. And so we can look and see what's going on internally, but we also just – oh, but if we sort of look – externally, so, oh, all these other people are waiting too. Oh, we're all waiting together. Oh, you know, what's, you know, it's like, it's just a community waiting, basically. So we change our perception almost immediately, or can change our perception immediately, and realize that, you know, everybody's suffering a little bit here. But if we
yeah,
sort of
and then,
bring it
and then
together.
and then I can remember, you know, waiting for a bus to buy tickets for a bus in Spain. And then that the person comes to the cuts in the front of the line.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah, there's always one.
There's all. Yeah. And yeah. And that's just OK. We're not all waiting in the same line.
Right.
Some of us are on their own line.
But yeah. So, I mean, these are all opportunities for, you know, well, again, this is, you know, where mindfulness and right effort come together. It's like remembering. So the remembering aspect of mindfulness, yeah. and then, oh yeah, let me look, you know, and so the effort in investigation, the right effort in investigation, and then that investigation hopefully can lead to a slight release anyway of the dukkha. And, oh, and then there's that moment of freedom, which then realizes, oh, okay, so this is actually, there was no reason to be suffering here, you know, mm-hmm. or the reason was just a fabrication of thought, or, you know, whatever it is, we sort of see in that moment some level of fruition, and that fruition creates more energy, which makes the effort that much easier. It's like, as the energy is there, the effort is relatively easeful, I think.
Yeah, and it may not be that you're completely away from suffering. I mean, no. You know, and the suffering may come back the next,
minute.
You know, 30 seconds, you know, and mm-hmm. you're frustrated again. So, you know, I think it's, you should be aware that it's a process, you know, but look, little victories, right? You're not expecting to become enlightened, you know, just by standing on the subway platform, but you know, hey, a little victory. I'm sure it has.
At least for, you know, a moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is, you know, it's one thing, you know, to know these exertions of, you know, letting go of the unskillful and, you know, bringing in the skillful tendencies. And that's really important. And it's not something we just do when we're sitting on the cushion or the, you know, or in formal meditation. In fact, it's just important to do it all the time if we can. Good luck with that. But it's, you know, it of course comes back to some degree to intention, which you talked about a couple of weeks ago, and the intention to do it in a way that is imbued with kindness, essentially imbued with care and self-compassion. It's like, oh, mm-hmm. Oh, there I go again. Oh, that's interesting. What was behind that? Right. It's like, oh, is that happened? You know? And then, you know, we can unpack these little events as we go through our day and realize, oh, it was that caused this. And if I just let go of that, you know, this wouldn't have happened.
Right.
So it's so interesting how all these teachings, like, so that's just the teaching on conditionality, but it's there all the time.
Yeah. I mean, and there are so many related teachings. I mean, of course, there's the teaching that you were alluding to before of metta. We can do metta practice, of loving kindness practice, while we're standing on the or sitting. People have I've heard some friends of mine talk about doing metta practice on the subway, you know, so that you don't get angry at people around you for doing whatever they're doing.
Well, my way of doing that is just imagining that everybody in that subway car is who you're going to be living the rest of your life with.
What is it? Jean-Paul Sartre's no exit.
Oh yeah, exactly. It's like, yeah, hell. This is it. You know, are you going to like hate these people, or are you going to really love these people? And it's like,
right.
And in New York, that can be a challenge at times. You know,
it could be. The other aspect is the practice of guarding the sense doors, which is something that I think gets a certain amount of overlook because I think some teachers sort of, you can think of it as kind of like being aversive and think of it as an aversion practice, which really it shouldn't be seen that way. But the idea is to be aware of what kinds of situations set you off and to, you know, in whatever way you get set off, whether that's getting angry, getting greedy or whatever. And, you know, to make a mindful decision of whether you really need to get yourself into those situations in the first place. Now, I mean, of course, if you were enlightened, then you would be able to do, presumably you'd be able to do anything and not be set off. But we aren't enlightened, and so we have to be aware of that. So, I mean, for me, you know, certainly there's a lot of that involves, like, cutting way back on my, you know, sort of a consumption of news. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of my friends, I think, spend hours and hours watching news, and I just don't. I mean, of course, as we've discussed before, I think everyone, as responsible citizens, we should be informed, and I think we should all have a certain amount of that of news following just to know what's going on. But you know, so much of it is just sets me off, and it doesn't do me any good, really.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. No, I hear you.
And in the past, I've been in these kind of spirals of watching all the news and reading all the commentary and listening to all the talking heads, and then at the end of the day, you're just like in a jag, you know, sort of like you know, like you've had too many cups of coffee.
Yes.
And it just doesn't help because you don't learn anything from 95% of it. It's just the same stuff over and over again. It's papuncha, is what it is. It's
right. Yeah, yeah. And when you go on retreat for a month. When you don't watch the news at all or watch anything, and then you come out and you realize nothing's changed.
It won't.
Yeah, and so you're right. I mean, that kind of input can certainly create the conditions which make it hard to bring in right effort.
Yeah, and for each of us, it's going to be something different. I mean, some people may be perfectly fine watching the news, but may have their own thing, right? And you have to sort of think, when you see these kinds of syndromes in your life, of some kind of thing that you're doing regularly that just doesn't seem to be very helpful because it gets you riled up in one way or another and doesn't do anything for you that's positive, you know, think about guarding the sense doors, just to say, look, you know, maybe I don't need that. Maybe I should be spending my time doing something else.
Yeah, and that certainly would play into the exertion of keeping
right effort
out the unhelpful, for sure. And that's these sense doors are wonderful, and they create problems. Mm-hmm. Or the sense doors don't create problems; it's the mind that's attached to those sense doors.
Monkey mind.
Yeah. And so, you know, these are just areas to look at and check it out.
Yeah.
When we have these for MBSR classes, which are mindfulness-based stress reduction classes, where, you know, a lot of people in those classes it's their first experience with meditation. And so we do these all day practices once during the 8 weeks. And I suggest that people hand over their cell phone for the day. And many people do. And then by the end of the day, they really don't want them back, you know, because it was such a relief not to have it.
There you go. Yeah.
And so that's just one example of a way of checking out, like, how easily our minds are overtaken.
Yeah. And that can be a great teacher, you know, to say, look, you know, if you're finding that your cell phone, if you're really happy after not having your cell phone for a day, that's a great practice of, of guarding the sense door. Yeah.
Renunciation.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, for sure. But the one thing we'll never renounce is a cup of coffee in the morning.
Not too much. Now we want to guard our sense doors there. You know, a cup of coffee or two is fine, but we don't want to overdo it and not be able to sleep.
All right. Well, I overdo it usually. I've gotten better about not having it afternoon. But every once in a while. And
as
then
long
you
realize it doesn't help your sleep. It doesn't hurt your sleep.
Yeah,
you're fine.
And it is interesting though, because you realize that it is a habit, that it's actually the need to have something in my hand.
Yeah.
Or part of it. But it's funny. I was listening to, I think it was, yeah, there was Steve, sorry, folks, senior moment here. Stephen Wright, who was a comedian from the 80s, 70s and 80s,
yeah.
Boston-based comedian. He's like making a bit of a comeback. He was on the Colbert Show the other day, and he looks like he's now must be in his late 70s, actually. And Colbert was asking him how he does his writing. You know, he says, well, coffee, you know, I have to have coffee. And when I have the coffee, I start to think, and it's amazing what comes up with the coffee. It was actually a really sweet interview. So yeah, coffee definitely serves a function and tastes good and supports us.
It supports us. Yeah. I mean, we're not literally buying coffee with it. We're helping to pay the back end for this.
I don't know. Indirectly.
Indirectly, yeah. Yes.
Anyway, but it does pay for the back end of this show and which has some expenses. So we appreciate if you can buy us a coffee, and you can do that at digginthedharma.com and
leave us a comment.
We appreciate it. Yeah. So this is a good conversation about effort and energy and all important factors when it comes to our own practice. So hope you have found it helpful, friends, and look forward to seeing you or hearing you or being with you the next time, however we are there. And Doug,
indeed.
See you soon.
Yeah, thanks very much, John. Great to see you.
Take care. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave a review on your podcast directory. And please check us out at digginthedharma.com, where you can leave a comment, buy us a coffee, and even become a member. You can find out more about me, John Aaron, at johnaaron.net, and Doug at dougsdharma.com.